and welcome to Let's Build, the podcast where we talk about building strength, stability, and self-reliance through affordable housing. I'm your host, Kirsten Pittman, Community Outreach Coordinator for Central Valley Habitat for Humanity in Bridgewater, Virginia. And today, we're going to talk about how housing instability affects physical and mental health. We'll talk about the four pathways that connect housing and health, and how each of these affects someone long-term. We'll also cover resources for those that may suffer from mental health disorders and housing instability, and where someone can find assistance or where you can volunteer in our local community. We've been busy here at Central Valley Habitat for Humanity over the past few weeks as we celebrated a double home dedication with two families on Virginia Avenue in Harrisonburg. This is our first public dedication since the onset of COVID-19, and our staff were completely blown away by the number of community members and volunteers that came out to support these families. I also wanted to share this week that our volunteer sign-up calendar is open again. We've been waiting so long, and a lot of planning went into the reopening of build days, but as of Monday, you can now head to our website to plan your build day. On top of our website, look for the Volunteer tab, and from there, fill out the eligibility form. Submitting the form will take you directly to our volunteer calendar where you can choose your day. With that, let's talk about health and housing. The fact that housing instability has an effect on mental and physical health is widely accepted among organizations like ours and is quickly becoming one of the best researched areas for studies surrounding affordable housing. The data that is collected from these studies becomes invaluable when housing nonprofits like us and advocacy groups take it to government agencies and other policymakers in order to convince them that affordable housing is a very real and very devastating issue. Today, I'll be using a brief from Health Affairs called Housing and Health, an overview of the literature by Lauren Taylor, to talk about how housing and health outcomes are viewed in four distinct pathways, and how each pathway has different effects on those that are moving through it. In the show notes, you can find the links to all the articles and studies I reference in the podcast, so you can check these out for yourselves. So, where do we begin? I think we'll start with an overview of the four pathways that connect health and housing. Pathway one is called the stability pathway. It looks at studies that examine the health impacts of not having a stable home. Second is the quality and safety pathway, which examines health impacts from conditions inside the home. In our language, we would consider this unsafe and under-maintained housing, especially rental housing. The third pathway is the affordability pathway, which looks at how financial burdens from high-cost housing affect health. Finally, the fourth is the neighborhood pathway, which describes the health impacts of neighborhoods, including both environmental and social characteristics of where people live. We'll start with the stability pathway. In our last episode, we talked about the hidden homeless and how they fit into the affordable housing crisis. They are a good example of one of the populations that may fit into the stability pathway in this brief. This particular pathway focuses on how the lack of a home or stable home can heavily affect an individual's health. According to the brief, people who are chronically homeless face substantially higher morbidity in terms of both physical and mental health and of increased mortality. Many people experience traumas on the streets and in shelters, which has long-standing adverse impacts on psychological well-being. Even children who experience homelessness while only in utero are more likely to be hospitalized or suffer worse health compared to their peers. Conventional homelessness is only a part of the picture. The hidden homeless, those who are not chronically homeless but still face housing instability and often spend time moving frequently, spending time on a relative's couch, on someone's floor, etc., are more likely to experience poor health in comparison to their stably housed peers. This can lead to many consequences, especially in youth and young adults. This type of instability is heavily associated with health and social problems, like an increased risk of teen pregnancy, early drug use, and depression. Foreclosures and evictions are at an all-time high post-COVID-19 job losses and financial insecurity, And we expect to see that number climb as eviction bans, which we covered in episode 2, start to end. According to the brief, a review of 25 studies that examined the impact of foreclosure on mental health and health behaviors, including substance abuse like alcohol, found that all of the studies reported that foreclosure was associated with worsened outcomes, including depression, anxiety, increased alcohol use, psychological distress, and suicide. How do we assist the individuals that are in the stability pathway? The answer is both complicated and simple. We house them. Providing housing, not just shelter, to homeless and hidden homeless individuals suffering from this pathway improves their health outcomes, especially among the chronically homeless. One example of this is the Housing First model, in which chronically homeless people with a diagnosis of a behavioral health condition receive supportive housing and has been shown to be particularly cost-effective. We'll talk about some resources in our next segment, but let's move on to the safety and quality pathway. This effect on families is related to the conditions within a substandard or unsafe home. According to the National Center for Healthy Housing, by American Housing Survey standards, about 6 million homes in the United States are substandard, a statistic that has seen little change over the last two decades. This study is performed by the Department of Housing and Urban Development as well as the U.S. Census Bureau. In the brief, the safety and quality pathway addresses some of the unsafe conditions that a family may experience. The brief states, "A number of environmental factors within homes are correlated with poor health. In-home exposure to lead irreversibly damages the brains and nervous systems of children. Substandard housing conditions such as water leaks, poor ventilation, dirty carpets, and pest infestation have been associated with poor health outcomes, most notably those related to asthma. These types of conditions don't stop with poor health, because in many cases, these families will have to start making difficult choices between medical bills, hospital stays, treatment, and paying their rent. In some cases, medication that is prescribed but needs to be kept in a controlled environment may not be possible, leading to even more issues. So how does eliminating poor environmental factors help the issue? Studies in which asthma triggers are removed have repeatedly demonstrated health improvements and cost reductions among both children and adults. Children and families participating in the federally funded low-income home energy assistance program, which provides financial assistance for home heating, medically necessary home cooling, and emergencies due to weather-related fuel shortages, were at a healthier weight and at less nutritional risk compared to their non-participant peers. We talked about the importance of a temperature-controlled home environment and homes built with energy efficiency in mind in our episode about green building, so head to that episode next if you want to learn more about this particular pathway. The next pathway is one that I talk about often in presentations to organizations, and also one that is increasingly coming to light in conversations with our local government officials, and that is the affordability pathway. We've already determined that no one should be spending more than 30% of their income on housing, but many, many low-income families are spending upwards of 50% of their income on housing. If both rents and incomes rise at the current rate of inflation, the number of American households that are severely cost-burdened because of rent is expected to reach 13.1 million by 2025, an 11% increase from 2015. In our area, we've already determined, thanks to the Alice report, that 38% of residents in the city of Harrisonburg alone are living below 80% of the average median income, designating them as a low-income household. These are the families that are cost-burdened in our area and facing struggles every day by being pulled financially in every direction by health costs, repairs, transportation, poor pay, clothing, food, and other necessities. The brief gives a few examples of this. A lack of affordable housing options can affect families' ability to make other essential expenses and can create serious financial strains. Low-income families with difficulty paying their rent or mortgage or their utility bills, which are already about 5% higher than a financially stable family, are less likely to have a usual source of medical care and more likely to postpone needed treatment than those who enjoy more affordable housing. Severely cost-burdened renters are 23% more likely than those with less severe burdens to face difficulty purchasing food. On the flip side of this, a family with affordable rent payments or mortgage payments usually experiences less food insecurity, and according to the study, they have been found to increase their discretionary income by 77%, freeing up funds to spend on health insurance, food, and education. Finally, we have the neighborhood pathway. This is our fourth and final one that I'm going to cover today. Previously, I've covered the fact that children who are able to escape the cycle of poverty and grow up in a stable, affordable home in what is considered a good neighborhood or a high-income neighborhood ends up making more money in their adult lives and have more opportunities. This pathway details why neighborhoods with concentrated, unsafe, and unaffordable housing struggle with health. Researchers have found that the availability of resources such as public transportation to one's job, grocery stores with nutritious foods, and safe spaces to exercise are all correlated with improved health outcomes. Living in close proximity to high-volume roads, in contrast, is a danger to health and can result in increased rates of respiratory diseases such as asthma and bronchitis and increased use of healthcare. Less visible, but potentially even more important, are neighborhoods' social characteristics, including measures of segregation, crime, and social capital. David Williams and Chiquita Collins, in particular, have documented the impact of neighborhood segregation on health, suggesting that segregation widens health disparities by determining access to schools, jobs, and healthcare, influencing health behaviors and increasing crime rates in neighborhoods of color. In our episode on Home Ownership Month and our last episode on the ALICE population, we covered the statistics that minorities are even more greatly affected by housing instability and poor government policies. This is unacceptable, and as we continue the conversation about affordable housing and the importance of home ownership, we must be sure to actively think about and keep in mind these communities and stay away from the pitfalls of gentrification, which we will cover in a future episode. Now that we've covered the four pathways that connect health and housing, let's talk about some resources that are available for those struggling in these areas or those who want to advocate for them. We covered the four pathways, but often families and individuals in these situations that are facing poor mental, physical, and financial health have trouble locating the assistance that they need. Today, I thought we would cover some of the programs available nationally and in our local area that we can advocate for. Let's start with mental health and disability resources. According to Mental Health America, one of the biggest issues some people with mental illness face is the availability of housing. For many people, having a mental health condition has no impact on their housing. Most people can and do live independently in apartments or in their own homes. For others, the cascading effects of mental illness might leave them in a precarious housing situation or even cause them to lose their homes. Having a safe and secure place to live is an important part of recovery, along with access to services that enable those with mental health conditions to live as independently as possible. Having a mental health condition can make finding and keeping a home challenging. If you are poor, renting an apartment may be beyond your means. Affordable housing may be available, but located in unsafe or hard-to-reach places. You may be placed in a group home or apartment where there will be rules to follow and you will be living at close quarters with people you don't know. Your illness can interfere with your ability to comply with rules, keep your home up, get along with others, or meet lease requirements. Nonetheless, there is a cause for hope as you travel along your road to recovery. Although it may take some time to find yourself a home, the different types of housing described here can provide you with the services, support, and affordability that you need at this time in your life. Some options to find these resources include your local housing authority, such as the Harrisonburg Redevelopment and Housing Authority that we have here, shelters that focus on mental health or have specific qualifications, such as domestic abuse or rehabilitation. One local example is a nonprofit called DePaul Community Resources, which has a crisis intervention program and an independent living program. According to their page, crisis intervention at DePaul is designed to be a short-term, office-based intervention that will allow an individual to meet with a counselor for up to 5 sessions. Spread out over days or weeks, these sessions can address certain mental health crises, needs such as an individual experiencing difficulty in establishing or maintaining normal relationships, to a degree that they are at risk of psychiatric hospitalization, homelessness, or isolation from social supports without appropriate intervention. Another resource for this would be the Centers for Independent Living, which has a list by state of all the independent living centers and their locations. The link for Virginia's centers will be available in the show notes, but our local agency is called Valley Associates for Independent Living, located in Harrisonburg. For those looking for temporary housing assistance, there's a tool on the Department of Housing and Urban Development website that can direct you to assistance based on your state. It lists programs by the type of temporary assistance needed, including links to the Section 8 voucher program and the Fair Housing Act. If you aren't looking for housing assistance but do need affordable healthcare options, many areas have local free clinics available. In our area, we have the Blue Ridge Free Clinic in Harrisonburg, which provides free services to families and individuals that are low income and meet the requirements of the clinic. They can help you sign up for Medicaid if you are eligible, and their website is blueridgefreeclinic.org. All links will once again be available in the episode description. Finally, one of our local resources and one that is quickly expanding to other areas of the United States is the Unite Us program. We're very excited about this program. We've been a part of it now for about 2 years. Our organization and many others in the area are part of Unite Virginia, which is a community support database and network for nonprofits and other businesses that can work with people in need of assistance. Any community partner in the network can refer a new client to other services in the area that they may need, without the client needing to call around to all the different places. This allows us to only refer people to programs that are currently open and operating, and create referrals to mental, physical, financial health services, food programs, transportation assistance, legal help, and more. The United Way of Harrisonburg and Rockham County is our local administrator and central hub for the program. And if you are seeking assistance after hours, you can head to their website at uwhr.org/need-help. A trained staff member from their organization will reach out to you after you complete the form to help you with your assistance needs once they open. With that, we're coming to the end of today's episode, so we'll finish it out with a quote from Florence Nightingale. "The connection between the health and dwelling of the population is the most important one that exists." The takeaways from today are that low-income families can struggle in many different ways with poor health due to housing instability, substandard housing, affordability, and poor neighborhood planning. And children and populations of color suffer more than any other population. Health isn't just physical, it can be mental health as well, and can be the cause of poor housing as well as an effect of poor housing. They can't always find the assistance that they need, but there are programs available that we can advocate for and educate on so that all of our fellow community members have a safe, decent, and affordable place to call home. Thank you for listening today. Come build with us over on Facebook and Instagram at Central Valley Habitat or at Central Valley VA on Twitter. We're always looking for volunteers, so if you think Habitat is for you, check us out on our website, www.centralvalleyhabitat.org. I've been your host, Kirsten Pittman, with Central Valley Habitat for Humanity. Let's get out there and build. Until next time.